Good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to the Sunday edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. We are viewer-supported stations, folks, so if you like what's going on over here, please hit the donate button. I know the stations would much appreciate the support. Anybody that's listened to me talk over the last 3 or 4 years on radio or even the last 5 years know that one of the biggest focus of my attention is the that demon plant cannabis. And when I first really started looking at the medical benefits of it years ago, it absolutely astounded me. Through meeting people like Rick Simpson and being really educated on the medical benefits, I didn't pay too much attention to the actual commercial benefits and hemp being used as a building product. But in the last couple of years, it's garnished a lot of my attention. I got told about a company called Just Biofiber out of Calgary, Alberta. And today the president and one of the co-founders of that company has been gracious enough to give me an hour of his time to really kind of break it down to you folks exactly all the incredible benefits of using hemp as a building product. When I look at the properties, it absolutely astounds me. I'm not an expert by any shape of the imagination. I've only been able to comprehend some of the properties because my brain ain't that big. But I'm sure Terry will get a chance to explain some of the things that I wouldn't even be able to get touching on today. Terry, thanks for taking time out of your day and joining me. This is one of the shows I've been looking forward to for a long time, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation, Barry. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with your audience on the topic of hemp as a building material.
Well, it's time, eh, Terry? It really is time for this to come forward, because when I look at full spectrum of what hemp can do for the human race, this is a big part of really starting to a step forward in cleansing the planet, which is one of my main concerns. Of course, it's the main concern of a lot of us right now, and it plays right into it. So why don't you give a people a lowdown on the company and how you guys got started? There's a million questions I'm sure that people want to be able to ask you. I'm going to ask you a few here in a few minutes, but why don't you give us a breakdown on the company and how you guys got started, where you're located, and how you're making progress forward?
Oh, super. Okay. We started up about 4 years ago, and my brother is the inventor of the product. He'd been working on it for the last 6, 8 years. And we recognized the benefits of using hemp as a building material. And the problem that we saw was that it's difficult to work with due to the amount of time it takes to dry when you're putting it in situ and tamping in place. So it's a long build cycle. So it's very difficult to get it into a commercial market. It's pretty much for do-it-yourselfers, just like hay bale construction or any other type of earth build. So what my brother had done is he'd invented a way to put the structure inside a block material, and that way we could factory form the blocks that made out of hemp, and you could use them in building materials to build wall systems and there's no waiting. After you're done, you can go right ahead and put your plaster finish on it and put your floor on top and carry on. So it was a major breakthrough in the hemp materials market, and also to use it commercially. So we can use our product for home builds as well as for commercial construction as well. And that's one of the big milestones is when we were able to get certifications on its structural capability for, you know, seismic and earthquake zones and to be able to go, you know, 4 floors. So we've been working quite diligently on getting all of our testing and certification for the material. So what we've done is we've developed a block. It's a bit larger than a regular cement concrete masonry. So our blocks are more like Lego is what everybody calls them. They're about 20 inches, 22 inches long, 8 inches high and about 10 and a half inches wide. And you can stack them up rather quickly. And we've even had young people that have been able to assemble them because they're quite light. They weigh about 25 pounds each. The big benefit to hemp as a building material is, first of all, it absorbs large amounts of CO2 while the plant is growing. And when we mix it with a lime binder, it becomes locked up. That CO2 stays locked up in the material for as long as the house is standing. So that's one of the big benefits to using hemp is the amount of CO2 it can absorb while it's growing. And just to give you some quick math, it's about 1.6 times its weight. So for example, we use about 4 kilos of hemp in each block, and that accounts for about a little over 5 kilos of 5.5 kilos of CO2 is locked up in that in each product, each block. So an average house of about 1,000 square feet would be about 10 tons of CO2 that gets sequestered.
One report I read is that one hectare of industrial hemp absorbs approximately 10 tons of carbon per year. That's about four times a conventional forest. So that alone is a monumental statement. If we really wanted to have an effect on carbon, it would make sense to have thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of industrial hemp growing.
Well, it does two things. If you substitute wood for hemp, you also leave the trees, and they can still keep absorbing CO2 and creating oxygen, which in my opinion is a much better use for trees than cutting them down.
Well, exactly. And that's something, I mean, that could be a subject we could get into for 20 minutes by itself, because we are seeing oxygen depletion on the planet. Well, industrial hemp has to be putting out a fair amount of oxygen in its growth process too, correct?
Yes, but I'm unfortunately don't have the data on that. I don't know what the stats are on it.
Well, look, I did read a report on that, actually, and that was about a year ago, that stated that an acre of hemp, combined with the amount of fiber that it actually produces over a 50-year period, will produce about three times as much oxygen as a conventional forest over that 50-year period. Now, I've read a couple of reports. I'm trying to get actual hardcore data, because if that's the case, and we are seeing oxygen depletion as a problem right now on the planet, and that's a fact, then it would make absolute sense right now to cover the planet in industrial hemp. That's a no-brainer, right? Go ahead, Terry. When I get talking about this, I think about all the offshoots, because really it's all full circle. It all comes back to one plant that the planet has to embrace, and what you guys are doing, I'm just tickled pink. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that we're doing for the hemp industry is finding a market. This is the whole thing. For something to be successful, I don't care what business it is, you have to have a market. And we've had great market acceptance for our materials because it's readily available to build with. So to go through the numbers, like, we will use, you know, tens of thousands of tons of hemp straw to turn into building materials. So what it does is it provides a secondary market for the people who are growing hemp. Exactly. There's a good market for fiber already for textiles and for technical fibers and the automotive sector. And but the herd itself, the herd that we use, the part we use is the woody core of the straw. So if you know how the plant works, it's got a soft woody core, and it's surrounded by bast fibers, and it's those fibers that are used for textiles. And we take the woody core, which is a kind of a waste product right now, and that's what we use as the aggregate in our building materials. So we're providing a very, very large secondary market for those hemp producers to sell their straw.
Right.
So if you look at the uses of the hemp plant, in Canada, we mainly grow it for grain, for food products, for human consumption. And if you go to other countries, for example, China, they mainly use it for fiber, for textiles. And then if you go to Europe, they mainly use, in Northern Europe, they use hemp as animal feed. So they use the leaves, flowers, and feed that to dairy cattle. Unfortunately, in Canada, we still don't have regulations of approvals for using hemp leaves as animal feed yet.
What a joke. We'll feed them steroids.
Yeah, well, we can use it for human consumption. That's the funny part. You can eat it if you're a human, but not if you're a cow.
But don't we eat cows?
But that's the worry is you don't want to introduce it into the food chain if it's not proven yet. So it takes a couple of years to get new feed introduced for the animal market.
I'm trying to make a little bit of light out of it, because hemp has been used as a feed for animals for thousands of years, and of course if your animals are ingesting a plant with the properties of hemp, the CBLs, the CBDs, everything is beneficial in that plant, and you're feeding to your animals, the end product is going to be absolutely beneficial to the human body. That is a no-brainer in my world. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're waiting for is the guys right now at the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance here in Canada. They've been working with our people in legislature for the animal feed to try and get it introduced and approved. It'll still be at least a year to 2 years away. Right. And the reason I bring that up is, there's not that much hemp grown in the world. It's a very, very small, you know, less than 0.1% of the agricultural crops, mainly because it's been illegal to grow in most of those countries. And now with the passing of the Farm Bill in the U.S. allowing hemp to be grown, it'll certainly change. But in Canada, it's been legal here for, what, 18 years? Mm-hmm. And we still only have a very, very small, like maybe 100,000 acres.
Well, it's because of the demand. But, you know, hopefully what you're doing and sharing this information about these products today will increase that demand because, of course, as more people start to embrace these products, the demand for hemp will grow. And, of course, that has mega offshoot advantages for society. So that's really where I hope this goes in the very near future, that that we can really get the general public to really embrace these products when they start to look at the qualities. And really, to me, Terry, you don't have to have an IQ of 100 to look at the qualities of these products and compare it to conventional building products. It really, to me, it just, everything I've looked at, there is just absolutely no comparison. One of the questions I have in chat, and I don't know if you actually looked into the detoxifying effects of industrial hemp or commercial hemp when it's planted, especially on radiation. Have you read any reports on that? Because I have read a few, and I'll make a comment on that if you haven't.
We can share our findings. What I've learned, again, I'm no expert on it as a farmer or a grower, but what I've learned is that it has remediation capabilities to be able to take those heavy metals and radioactive isotopes out of the soil while the plant is growing. And it actually basically dissipates it. It turns it into carbon in the soil is what it does. Is that the same understanding you have, Barry?
Yeah, actually, I read one report from Japan, and I read another from Germany, and I can actually go dig these reports up for people if they want to see them on what exactly happens to soil that's contaminated with just about anything they've planted it on so far. That soil is actually cleansed in about 3 years. One of the reports in Japan stated that it removed absolutely undeniable proof that it removes nuclear isotopes, or as you said, turn them into carbon and actually breaks it down and makes it something that could be put back into the earth instead of killing us. So there is absolute proof on what we're talking about, the effects of that. And also there is reports about the effects of a normal crop being grown on a field that's been exposed to industrial hemp for 2 or 3 years. The crop that you produce at the end of that will be far, far more beneficial to the human body in the levels of phytochemicals, et cetera, et cetera. I read another report on that. I try and get to a lot of this. I can't comprehend a lot of it, Terry. My brain's very small. But everything I read seems to be positive as far as the effect goes on the planet. And, you know, our biosphere is in a lot of trouble right now on the planet. We've been exposing it to chemicals, and the spraying chemicals in our sky. We've been exposing it to stuff like glyphosate through mass spraying over the last 20 years. I mean, the reports now coming out about that just mind-boggle me. It just, we are absolutely poisoning ourselves. And here we have a mechanism that can really make a change and remediate all that. So that's one of the reasons I get excited about him. Go ahead, sir.
From talking with some of the growers and farmers that I've been working with, they introduce hemp into their crop rotation. So, for example, here in Western Canada, we grow a lot of canola for vegetable oil. And the problem with canola is it's not a monoculture. You cannot grow it year after year on the same piece of land. So you have to rotate your crops. Otherwise, you get disease in the soil. And that's one of the great benefits for hemp is, first of all, hemp really likes nitrogen. So if you grow hemp after a lentil, a pea, or a soybean crop, it does better. And you can follow on with another crop after you've grown your hemp, and it'll do much better as well. So if you do the proper crop rotation, you can do basically organic farming. The other benefit to hemp when it grows is it chokes out all of the other weeds because it's a very large, tall plant with a lot of canopy of leaves. And so it chokes the weeds as well. So you end up with a clean crop in the second year after you've grown hemp.
That sounds like a pretty good no-brainer to me. You mean I don't have to use any Roundup, man, to get rid of them weeds?
Oh, God.
Wow. No. But, you know, when we talk about hemp, Terry, it doesn't matter really it doesn't matter what we talk about. When hemp comes into the equation, it seems to have a positive effect in just about anything that we can bring up in a conversation. And, you know, we talk about why hemp was taken away from society. We look at the introduction of chemicals and big farming and all these other entities in our society now that are really detrimental to the human body. And they demonized this incredible plant because they didn't want it. They gave it the name marijuana. And it was evil. Don't go near it. It'll kill you. It's the gateway drug. Smoke a joint, you're going to jump off a building, think you're a bird. And this is what I grew up hearing. And boy, I'll tell you, society now is really starting to get over that stigma. And the more the government pushes the stigma on it, the more the society is getting over it. So I see real, real positive steps forward right now, especially in the industry you're involved. Looking at a couple other companies down in the States that are getting involved in what you're doing, and it's really starting to garner a lot of attention. So this is going to be good information for people today, Terry.
Well, one of the concerns that people have had with us using hemp for a building material is, first of all, can you... You know the joke, if your house catches on fire, do you get high?
Nope. Nope.
So, we always have that one that comes up, and it's a bit of the snicker factor. But when we first brought this product to market, we didn't even mention it was made out of hemp. We actually came to market saying it was a biofiber material made from agricultural waste.
Because if you said hemp, people go running.
Yeah, we get that.
We got to get them educated, man. I'll tell you.
Yeah. So that's why we first went to market. That's where our company name is Biofiber, and just as in environmental justice, that's where the name came from. We didn't promote hemp at all for the first couple of years that we were producing the product.
Wow.
Well, again, the building construction industry is a very, very, old industry, and it's not fast to change. So it takes us quite a bit of time to educate people on the benefits of, using even just trying to explain how biofibers and lime mixed together is a good material. It's rather than using cement and concrete.
Well, I'll tell you, people are starting to listen, Terry, and I've been pumping your product up here for a couple months now, and actually longer than I've been talking to people about this and sending them to your site, and we are making headway up here with some people, and I shared that before the show, and we're going to see where that goes, because boy, if we can get one door opened up here in these communities around Terrace, it will go like wildfire. And really, when somebody sits down and thinks about even 50 years down the road, a lot of the houses and the reservations up here after 20 years or 25 years are condemned because of black mold. We have no fire protection on the reserves to say. I mean, if you get a fire, the volunteer fire department will get there in 15 or 20 minutes. By then, your house is burned to the ground. I look at the fire-resistant properties of this alone. Absolutely, it kind of blows my mind that you can build a structure that is so resistant to fire that it's really going to give people a chance to get out and save their belongings, and a lot less firefighters are going to lose their lives. We see a shift in the whole industry where the whole inside of our buildings, houses, can be built with hemp-based products. And I see as this getting more and more popular, other companies springing up and possibly filling those gaps, 2x4s, 2x6s, et cetera, drywall made with hemp. Completely build the inside of your house with hemp, and you're going to be living in one of the most oxygen-rich, sterile environments that you could ever possibly be raised in. The benefits are just mind-boggling. They really are. And I'm not an expert. I just look at everything with a common-sense approach. I look at what we're doing now in house construction, how many people lose their lives in fires. I want you to talk about the fire properties of this for a minute with people, because I watched one demo where you held a blowtorch against the property this product for about 2 minutes, and all it left was a black spot. You want to tell people a little bit about that?
Oh, sure.
Well, I'm going to get rambling.
Generally speaking, the hemp, it's called hempcrete, is the kind of the normalized term people use. But crete tends to indicate it's made with using Portland cement. And so we call it hemp lime. And the reason being is we don't use any Portland cement in our binder at all. It's all natural hydraulic lime that we use. And so when you combine the lime with the hemp, that's what gives it the fireproof qualities. And it's that combination, like we've done a 2-hour fire test, and it's had 100% structural integrity after 2 hours at over 1600 degrees. I think it's 980 degrees Celsius is what they they run the fire test at. So we're very happy with the fire rating on it. The other thing is that the amazing thing was that you could put your hand after 2 hours on the other side of the wall, and it was at little over room temperature. You weren't the heat was not being transferred through. So if you live in a really hot environment, hempcrete, like the hemp-lime configuration, is amazing for thermal transfer. So you can actually, you don't need air conditioning on really hot days.
So tell me something, Terry. Is your company going to expand into the actual inside construction material needed to build houses out of hemp?
There's actually a bunch of other companies we're working with. We don't believe in reinventing the wheel. So our what we really developed is that internal structure, the internal structural frame that allows our blocks to become a structural component.
Right.
In the building.
Right.
There's
right.
a company out of the UK called Adaptivate that makes breather board, which is basically wallboard, gypsum wallboard made using hemp and lime. So okay. it's similar to what we use today for drywall, but it's actually made with hemp. So it has the breathable capabilities. It does breathe. And it's also, again, has the benefits of using hemp and locking up CO2. So instead
right,
of
it also has the fire and would have fire retardant properties
oh, yeah.
as well.
Yeah, it has the same fire yeah. rating as just gypsum and drywall. It has the added benefit of the hemp being used in it as well.
So basically, in the near future here, we should be able to construct the whole inside of our house, outside of our house, that's totally fireproof, almost 100% fireproof, using hemp-based products. Would I be correct in saying that?
The only problem is the roof. We're working with some people out of California, because they right now they use clay tiles for the roofs. We use asphalt shingles here, which is a number one fire hazard. And there's also magnesium board, which is similar to cement board. It's made using magnesium. So again, there's no Portland cement. See, Portland right. cement is quite energy intensive and CO2 intensive. Whereas if you use magnesium, much lower CO2 output in the manufacturing. So that's why we recommend using magnesium board instead of using cement. So if you use the magnesium board on your eaves and use clay tiles, the old terracotta tiles.
Right. I see it used in California.
Yeah, they use in California, Spain, any place where it's hot. And the reason being is they're just made from clay. So it's also a very, a renewable product as well, a sustainable product. Right. So exactly. We find that's our big thing is it's about sustainability. You have to be able to do this for the next, 10 generations, not just for our generation. So that's why anything we do and people we work with, we like to make sure everybody has the same goal in mind, which is sustainability and longevity.
Well, it's leaving the planet or possibly maybe even possibly repairing some of the damage we've done to the planet and being able to give our generations in the future something to look forward to. Because right now the planet's got a lot of problems and we're talking about something that can make a monumental difference. When I look at some of the things about hemp, that we take into the factor here that hemp actually and these hemp products actually get stronger as they get older. There is an actual video on YouTube that you can go look at sometime, Terry, if you want, about a bridge in Europe that was built 564 years ago. And they're still using it today, built out of hemp. So.
Yeah. And
incredibly, it gets stronger than as it gets older. That would never actually, be able to say that.
That's actually a function of the lime berry. So it's actually the lime itself is the part that recarbonates. If anybody's heard about the cycle of lime, so lime is calcium carbonate, which is CaCO3 for the chemists out there. And when you heat it up, you remove some CO2, so it becomes CaO, so calcium oxide. And once you add water, calcium hydroxide, and you mix it up with the hemp, it binds and sticks to the hemp. And then what happens is as the water moisture goes out, it takes in CO2 again to recarbonate. So it turns back into CaCO3, to calcium carbonate.
Right.
And that's why it keeps absorbing that CO2, for the next 100 years. If anybody's ever worked with lath and plaster, the old buildings that were, the interior finished before drywall was made out of plaster. That plaster was lime plaster. And if you've ever had to do a demo on to demolish an old house made out of lath and plaster, you know how hard that stuff is. It
yeah,
is
like
stone. So that's how it gets harder. It's actually the lime that does the work. Whereas if you have Portland cement, after about 60 years, it starts to break down. If you look at our roadways and buildings that get demolished, it's after 60 years that are made out of concrete. That's the reason why. It's because concrete doesn't get harder over time. It actually starts to deteriorate due to moisture.
Hmm. Well, to me, it's pretty easy to make a decision. If I was building a house right now and I had the option of conventional wood and these products that you're talking about. I know you built one in Sioux. Is that correct? On the island?
There's one built.
How does it stand up to the seismic requirements for the island? Because you're on a fault line there.
Oh, actually, very good. We're working with a couple of engineering firms that have we've done finite element analysis modeling, as well as we've done destructive testing on wall assemblies, and we do have a good seismic rating for the coastline.
Okay, they have requirements that buildings are reinforced to certain degrees? Would it be exceeding those requirements, or just coming to those requirements? One of the questions that somebody was asking me.
Well, currently, all the modeling says it exceeds the requirements, but until we actually have engineers sign off, and if you ask an engineer what 2 + 2 is, he'll tell you that
7.
No, he'll say 4 is adequate, but 8 would be better. So that's the thing. Engineers always derate a product by at least a half. So once the engineers' reports are all done, you know, then we'll be able to say with confidence that yes, it meets and exceeds all the seismic requirements. But right now, I can't make that statement. We have done modeling. We know it's going to perform better than what the code says. But until we get our engineering report back, I can't stay unequivocally.
Well, you know what? There's going to be more and more modifications in this field and more advancements made in this field going forward here in the very near future. So I think you guys are on the ground floor. And I know that a lot of people are starting to pay attention. And that, to me, is a good thing. Because, like I said, it's the offshoots of actually starting to embrace hemp and what we can do to what's going on to the planet. Because the planet, like I said, is one of the focuses of a lot of my shows. I'm very, very concerned about what I see going on in our oceans and our land and in our environment, our food. Very, very toxic world we live in. And embracing this can really make strides in giving our children a lot healthier world. So, to me, it's just everything about it. I really want people to sit back and start thinking about some of the things we're talking about and how that can, by sharing knowledge and really starting to embrace this stuff, we can make monumental changes. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, we certainly can. The using hemp for the number of different uses, food products or fiber for building products, the oils, again, we're working with some people to use hemp oil to make resins for biocomposites. So there's a million uses for the hemp plant itself, and the more hemp we grow, the better it is for the environment, and more industries will become more cost effective to be used in multiple industries.
Exactly. So it's all relevant.
We need that critical mass to use hemp derived products, and buying building materials is one aspect. Buying hemp parts for your cereals another one. Using hemp oil on your salads. These are all ways we can contribute to getting hemp into the markets and getting it reintroduced. And the other thing is using hemp for paper, like using it for
fiber.
Fiber. Isn't the U.S. Constitution written on hemp paper?
It is so. And it makes an incredible fiber. It makes an incredible rope. There isn't a product really that's made with hemp that can be built or beat by synthetics and plastics when you really start to look at it. And then you look at the effect of producing cotton, what it does to water. And then you look at what we the amount of contaminants going into water when we produce fiber out of hemp. There is no contaminants, but when you're making cotton, you're adding multiple chemicals to the water system. You're using three times as much water as you need for hemp production. Everything about it, anything that I've ever looked at in hemp is a winner over what we've been doing in the last 100 years. But of course, that's a really deep rabbit hole, why hemp was taken away and why we have big pharma, why we now are the sickest nations on the earth, why all these different things have changed in your society and none of them are beneficial. It all comes back to me, Terry, about the big dollar, about a lot of different rabbit holes we could go down in that subject. But it really comes back to taking away something from society they know is going to benefit society and represents a threat to their big dollar. There's a thought for you.
Well, I agree. It's usually money is the root of all evil, or the lack thereof, because it was industry that chose to go to wood products instead of hemp products for papers. and
oil.
Yeah, and the
cotton
is a big industry. In fact, I was appalled when I found out just how many millions and millions of tons of cotton is produced in the world and how much water it takes.
Exactly.
And some good news, though, is when I was in China visiting the people in northern China, they were explaining that their centralized government wanted to have the southern region where cotton grows to grow food products. So that's why they were shifting to hemp fibers for textiles.
Right.
Because of the water consumption, it takes much less water, and it can grow in the northern climates where it's cooler. They don't need as much heat. Hemp does not need as much heat as does cotton.
It's a weed.
Yeah.
But it'll actually grow anywhere.
It prefers cool, dry climates. And so cotton is reversed. It wants hot climates with lots of moisture.
Right.
So they've decided that food production was more important than cotton. So that's why they've shifted to using hemp for textiles and growing more food in the areas where they were growing cotton. So it makes a lot of sense when you got to feed a lot of people.
Right. Kudos to them for that, because the more they look into this, the more they're going to start embracing cannabis in their society. I mean, I have a friend, and I don't know if you know Rick Simpson, ever heard of him, but he went over to Japan last year. He's been a friend of mine for about 7 years now. He's the one that really kind of woke me up one day to cannabis and the medical properties of it. He wrote a book called Running from the Cure, and he's known all over the world for exposing the effects of medical cannabis to the human body. But all that being said, he was in Japan, and he was talking to some of the heads of government over there in their agriculture and stuff, and I know that they're starting to implement hemp in a lot of their society right now. So we're making strides.
Yeah, the international community is actually not quite as close-minded as North American, but it's mostly the U.S. and its affiliates that adopted the same policies. Unfortunately, Japan fell under that after the Second World War. That's why hemp is still illegal in Japan.
Yeah, but they're starting to embrace the industrial use of it. I know that. I've read a couple of reports.
Yeah, they're getting there, but it's still going to be a while before it becomes legal to grow everywhere. So as far as, got off topic there, but I guess getting back to using hemp as a building material, we are seeing more and more other manufacturers, other products coming to market based on hemp, not just the wood, but fiber products as well, and composite products made with polyester resins made from bio-derived oils and using hemp fibers as well. So
right.
We're pretty lucky here. Like this is the reason we're in Alberta is they actually did have an incentive for us to work here because they've got the cortication and they're promoting other industries to get involved in hemp to diversify the agricultural economy. And so we're kind of fortunate. There's a half a dozen other companies here in Alberta working with hemp. Like there's a biocomposites group that does that thing about using hemp fibers in the automotive industry for erosion mats, in textiles. So there's a million uses. So we're encouraging anybody who wants to work with hemp. Chances are you can incorporate it in any other product or manufacturing process. It's so versatile. But as far as the materials go, we've already got in hemp insulation, where it's just the fibers, just like the fiberglass bat insulation, but it's made with natural fibers, the hemp fibers. So you can go out and, right now and you can purchase that bat insulation. That's available. We have that breather board, which is at least the interior drywall, and we have our blocks, the exterior walls. So we're getting there. Like there's a lot more companies creating hemp materials, mainly for the sustainability benefits, and also it reduces the carbon footprint of that building.
Exactly. But you're seeing a domino effect now. You're starting to see people really start to pay attention to it. You know, people do talk, people do converse amongst themselves. And people that I would say the word cannabis or marijuana to 5 years ago would just shun me and walk away. Are now their attitudes are changing. It is a domino effect, and what you're talking about, I can see that really going forward as other industries get on board, because when they start looking at it, Terry, it makes sense. Everything about it makes sense. 50,000 uses, everything in our house right now, everything you're looking at, everything you're using can be replaced with hemp.
Yeah, from all other material products. But here's where the big change that we're seeing happening in the world is people recognizing that energy equals CO2 emissions, because most energy in the world is derived from either oil and gas or from coal. And the amount of hydroelectricity in the world is very small. So if the more energy you use, the more CO2 you create by burning fossil fuels. So the International Energy Agency started doing some statistical data on where the energy goes. And, you know, we all thought it was our cars that were the big energy hogs. Well, it turns out it's not. It's our buildings. In fact, the buildings account in Canada for over 45% of all the energy used. People aren't aware of that. And then you got, you know, the manufacturing of building materials to make new buildings. So it's over 50% of the energy requirements here in North America are for heating and cooling and buildings. Huh. So it's huge. So if we can reduce the amount of energy used in a building as well, like that's where better insulation, better cooling and air conditioning, that's really where we're going to see the energy saving. And if you build that house out of carbon negative or carbon neutral materials, yet another benefit, let's say it's about another 6% of the total CO2 emissions. So, you know, there's a huge impact on the environment just from buildings, making them better insulated and better made with carbon reducing materials.
So that's your mind going in a million different directions, doesn't it, Terry?
The good news is that we actually have policy now. That's why you'll notice the Canadian government's been introducing stricter and stricter building codes to increase insulation values and do reduced energy consumption for buildings.
Right, because this falls right in line.
Yeah, well, it's a big part of our energy reduction program for the CO2 emissions to get it down. So once we see, you know, international agencies that create policy for governments making recommendations to increase efficiencies in buildings, that's a huge step in my mind to get the whole world understanding what it's going to take to get there. We can get there. It's a matter of the mindset for people, that they need to use less energy and to build things more efficiently. I was in the at the Green Build Show in Chicago a couple months ago, and I was so thrilled by all the young engineers that would come up to us, and they got why we were doing what we were doing. It was really amazing to me. And so the good news is the young engineers and architects that are graduating from schools now, they truly do understand the benefits of sustainable building and green building. Like they're all over it, and they want to see more products. So the whole architectural and building industry is hungry for products that are sustainable and energy efficient. We're going to see more of that.
Yeah, the word sustainable kind of rings a little bit with a UN agenda theme to me, but you know what? Being responsible for the way we construct, the way we treat our planet, to me, is one of the things that people really have to start taking a look at, because in the very near future, we're going to see major changes to the planet, and a lot of it's to do with what we're doing to this planet. A lot of the things happening in this world right now, I believe, are natural, that we're going through cycles, but we are definitely having impact on the planet with the way we're treating it. So to me, the human race really should start to sit down and have a look 15, 20 years down the road and ask them what they see coming. And if you look at some of the numbers that are out there right now on effects on our planet and our environment and our oceans, if it doesn't scare you and shock you to getting involved into making a change, then you're not paying attention. To me, there's multiple benefits to embracing this. Like we said, everything we're using now in our world can be replaced with hemp. And we haven't even really touched on the medical benefits and the endocannabinoid signaling system, which I can't even begin to understand. But I've been lucky enough to have a doctor on a few times. I've actually interviewed him about 6 times now. And, he's been studying this system in the body for 16, 17 years, and he still can't begin to understand how it all works. But it is the major integral part of our bodies. And again, it comes from the hemp plant, and it's essential to our health. Everything about the hemp plant is essential to our health. That's what I keep coming up with. I don't know about you, Terry, but that's what I keep coming up with. Go ahead.
You know, hemp has definitely been overlooked as far as all the benefits for human health. And the good news is that they start to understand cannabinoids and the benefits to the human body. And we're seeing more and more doctors that are, you know, they're getting away from the THC aspect of marijuana and more to the beneficial aspects of cannabinoids that hemp right. produces.
The CBDLs and the CBDs.
Yeah, does the, have you explained that to everybody, how the differences between cannabinoids and THCs?
Well, THC, you know what, I've had numerous conversations with numerous doctors over the years about cannabis oil, okay, and THC, of course, has an euphoric effect on the body when consumed. If you consume a large amount of THC, you're going to be sitting on the couch in La La Land for maybe 6 or 7 hours, but it won't hurt you. It has no residual effect. But THC is actually part of the cannabis plant. I don't believe it should be removed. It can be introduced as a medicine by incrementally introducing the THC to the body. And I've been involved, Terry, in about 5 or 6 people now in this area that we've introduced cannabis to them with THC in it, but we introduce it in a way that the body doesn't get whacked off the THC. You use small quantities, a pin drop the first 3 or 4 days, and then you double it, and then 4 or 5 days later you double it again. But THC is part of the healing process of the plant because it allows the body to relax. It puts the body in a very sedative state, which is when your body does its best healing. I believe that it shouldn't be taken out, but the CBLs and CBDs that are in cannabis are amazing for your body. The way it opens up the receptors in your body and allows your body to communicate within itself. And that's how the signaling system works in the body. And I really haven't got really much of an idea how it works. It's been explained to me by the doctor here 4 or 5 times, and it's really an intricate system. But it does work, and it is part of our body. Our bodies are born with cannabinoid receptors in them. They're in your mother's breast milk. It was used in our society for thousands and thousands and thousands of years and then taken away. Demonized and taken away from us. So to me, we're gone full circle. Now society is starting to realize full spectrum the benefits of it, and I see a monumental shift back towards it. And to me, it can't happen fast enough. My thoughts.
Well, we're getting there. The laws in Canada have changed, so now we have marijuana legal and hemp's been legal for almost 20 years. And now in the U.S., the Farm Bill is allowing farmers to grow hemp again. So we're getting there. It's been a slow process. But my comment about the differences between THC and cannabinoids is that the hemp plant has a very high concentration of cannabinoid CBDs and very low THC. So that's why you can't get high if you're from hemp.
But it has you have to smoke 1,700 joints in an hour, Terry, to get a buzz. So I'll tell people, if you can do that, fill your boots, man. I want to watch.
This is our first, thing we have to overcome is people understanding the difference between marijuana and hemp. And that's basically what I explained to them is it's the same plant. It's just one has higher THC content and the hemp has higher CBD content. That's really the difference.
Right. And you can also get strains of medical cannabis that have no THC, i.e. Charlotte's Web, which has an amazing effect on seizures, documented over and over and over again, but no THC. So there is strains on the market that you can get that have no THC, but really, really high in other essentials. One of the best videos I ever watched online, Terry, in the last 3 years was an RCMP officer that all his life arrested people for cannabis and had heavy, really bad Parkinson's. I mean, they took a notary in to document the changes, and he was given some cannabis oil. And in 1 hour, his shaking, which he'd been dealing with for the last 15 years of his life, had basically subsided. And the man was in tears. And now he's a cheerleader for the effects of cannabis. So there's a good story for him. That's on the YouTube. Go have a look at it. RCMP officer changes his mind about cannabis.
Wow. That's a
good video.
It's too bad it has to get to that point where people have to realize. So sorry, we get off topic again there, Barry. But
we did. I'm sorry, Terry. I get off topic a lot, man. But it all comes back to the same thing because we're all really talking about the same thing here. We're talking about something that society needs to embrace. And that's why what you guys are doing, I want to support it. I want to tell people. I want to share this knowledge and get it out there because it really, really can make a difference. And we talked about the offshoot industries that are going to come up. Sure, some industries are going to die. Well, are those industries doing any good for us right now? No. We can replace them with industries that are beneficial. And you think about all the possibilities going forward. We talked earlier in the show about maybe in the future having houses that are completely resistant to fire. Well, the lives and the damage and the grief and the firefighters' lives and everything else that's involved with fire could be eliminated in society. To me, that would be a good step forward. So everything we seem to talk about in all my years of talking about cannabis and medical, everything about the full spectrum, all is a win-win for the human race. And that's what it really comes down to. So what you guys are doing, Terry, I really applaud. And I really want to get the word out for you guys as much as I can.
Well, thanks, Barry. That's actually why I'm here. I came from an IT background, and when my brother was trying to get this product to market, I've done five startup companies in my career. This is my sixth one. And when I saw what he was doing, I said, you know what? It's going to be a struggle to try and get people to, first of all, adopt a new building system, let alone one made out of hemp. It's going to be a challenge. But I couldn't not do it because of the benefits.
Exactly.
And, you know, so I sat idly by and just, you know, watched it die. I can't do that. That's why I, you know, got involved with him and, you know, helped him with the startup and get this thing rolling, did the bootstrap to get this thing to the market. And so today.
Yeah, well, you know, I sense that the first time I talked to you, Terry, that you're in this for all the right reasons. You're not in this to get rich. You're not in this to get famous. You're in there to make a difference. And when I get involved talking with people like you, it inspires me that people out there right now really making or trying to make a difference. And your company and what you're talking about is just really up my alley. So you'll be hearing lots from me, and I won't stop talking about your products. Let me put it that way.
That's great. No, we need
I'm just getting more and more educated. I can't comprehend the structural stuff. That's beyond my brain's capacity, but the common sense elements of everything we're talking about today, I fully understand and want to embrace. So we're down to the last 10 minutes of the show. How many people is actually working for your company right now, Terry? Just out of interest.
We've got 14 on staff right now, and that includes our production crew and our engineering group as well. So we're in Airdrie, Alberta, just north of Calgary. That's where our current operations are. And we're producing right around 2,000 blocks a month. So generally speaking, that's one average house per month. Our problem is we've got orders for large commercial projects that are in the neighborhood of 20,000 and 50,000 blocks. So we have to get our production levels up. That's the long and short of it. So for that, it's all about investment money. We're actively looking for investment dollars right now to get our automation going so we can meet demand for orders.
Wow. Well, that's good to hear. It's bad to hear, but that's good to hear. I'm sure that anybody that's paying attention to what's going on and looks at this and has any kind of foresight into the very near future would be willing to invest in the company. We're going to have to get something done about that, Terry.
Well, this is the whole thing about
going to a show.
spreading the word is part of it, and orders is what it's all about. And we've got no end of orders. We get calls. I get probably, I don't know, 2-3 calls a day from people who want to build, houses or commercial buildings with the product. And I kind of just have to put them in the queue and find out when they're ready to go and see if we can line them up with our order fulfillment process. But that's a good problem to have, I'm told. Just don't like disappointing people by not being able to, you know, ship them when they need it.
Well, then maybe everything going forward, you'll be hiring a few more staff and automating your system more and reinvesting the money back in, which I'm sure you'll do right away. And I can just see this thing growing and growing and growing. I told you I've been talking to a few people up here that you're going to be hearing from this week, Terry. So be prepared for a couple conversations with a couple of our native people up here that are really paying attention to these products. Because for where they are and the situations they're exposed to living in rainforests and the problems they have with houses and black mold, this really would be a no-brainer for them. So hopefully they'll be talking to you on Tuesday here.
Well, that's great. We appreciate the spreading the word, Barry. It's muchly appreciated, especially with I've been in other conversations with other nations as well. From Saskatchewan, Ontario, Alberta, in addition, and they're all interested in long term. They want to have a home that lasts for 7 generations.
Yeah, instead of 20 months or 20 years.
So that's what we're working on, is to demonstration projects in those environments for native housing, so we can solve that problem, and also the efficiency issue as well, because the hemp. Our hemp line blocks are quite thick, and they also have thermal capacity, so they're very good for low energy requirements for heating and cooling. Right. And a lot of those areas, as you know, they don't have central heating. So it's a very good product.
I think I read R42 factor for insulation.
Well, it varies between the lowest we've ever measured at a steady state minus 20 is about an R21, 22. And in the best we've measured is an R42, which was actually that's in situ at that house in Souk. So we're monitoring real time information to get really accurate readings. And that's kind of what we're at for. So we just say, okay, it's an R30. That's kind of the average. Our reading, and it's mainly because of the thermal capacity, which is its ability to kind of store the energy in the material. It's nighttime, it doesn't cool down like a conventional system.
Right. And so because it's full cycle.
Right, and these are also quite thick. Don't forget, they're over 10.5 inches thick, so it's quite a thick wall. That's why it has that thermal capacity, just like adobe or a stone, where it'll contain the heat. And it's also
a couple quick questions for you before the show is over here. Now, the cost for this as opposed to conventional building costs, are they pretty well parallel now? Because that's my understanding.
Yeah, we're pretty well bang on. It's not going to be as cheap as a cheap house that's only got 2x4 walls. But if it's comparable to any high performance building system, such as insulated concrete form, we're pretty much the same price as that.
Right. How much difference between a stick frame and your products, just as a rough ballpark, so people get an idea how far you're away from getting it to that point?
We're about 15% more expensive right now.
That would be a no-brainer. That would be a no-brainer instantly. 15% on what you're talking about and compared to a stick frame, I think would be a no-brainer.
Conventional stick frame, you won't be able to build anymore because you have to meet the energy requirements for the new codes. So you're going to have to get up to R30. And once you do that, then you're pretty much the same price as us.
Cool. Well, that's good news. Now, I had one other question. I forgot. My mind's been going in a million different directions here today, and I had one other question. I forgot what I was going to ask you. I hate that. Brain fart. That's what happens when you get old, Terry.
No feeling.
But yeah, as far as how we see things going forward, I think we're both on the same page. I wish I'd got involved a little bit earlier in my life in hemp and understanding its benefits, but I was a little bit late in waking up. But now that I'm awoke and I see the benefits, it really is a focus of a lot of my conversations and trying to get people educated on how we can really, really make a difference to the planet, to our future, to our children, and everything going forward by embracing hemp. Would I be safe to say one of your products is going to have at least a 200-year lifespan?
We say it's good for 5 to 7 generations. So 5 generations, no problem. That's only like 60, 80 years. So it should last for 200 years, yes.
Okay. Well, we're not going to be able to tell for 200 years, are we?
All the indications we've done, all the testing we've done, it's leaning to about 200 years. Again, it depends on how you finish it and how you take care of it too. So
great. And when it's done, I guess when it's all done, you can just throw it in the landfill, and it's not going to have any detrimental effects on the planet, is it?
No, in fact, when we build, we have very little waste, less than 1% waste during the construction process, and then for composting, there's the internal composite frame or structure. That actually will last for 1,000 years. So what we do with that is we actually recycle that into new product. So we ask for our back. We're totally committed to being responsible for our own waste. So we will take any waste product back and we will reprocess it into new materials.
Kudos to you, my friend. Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, Terry, we're down to the last couple minutes here. Do you want to share real quickly to the listeners where they can find you, your site, any other information you can share, and then I'll have to close out the hour.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for the opportunity, Barry. I really appreciate your time and your program here. If people want to reach us, they can reach us at justbiofiber.ca, which is JustBiofiber, or FIBRE, if you're French-Canadian, .ca or .com. And cool. My name is Terry Radford, and we're, again, located in Airdrie, Alberta. And if you want to call us, they can call us at 403-984-5427. And if you just put an 800 in front of that, it'll be the same, 888-984-5427.
Well, thank you, Terry, for joining me. This has been a very enjoyable conversation, and I think we probably maybe put a couple light bulbs in a few people's brains today. I hope we have. This is a kind of show I really enjoy doing, and thanks again for taking time out and joining me. Very, very enjoyable hour, sir. Thank you.
And thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a break for 2 minutes. I'm going to go clear my bladder, and I'll be right back. We're going to shift gears and going to have to talk about stuff that I really don't like talking about after talking about this, but we have to go down this rabbit hole, and, of course, we're talking about Justin Trudeau. Back in about 3 minutes with Frank Vaughn. Hang in, guys. It's going to be a little bit of a different shift. Well, welcome back to the second hour, guys, and thanks again to Terry Radford for taking time out of the day, coming in and sharing that information with us. I really enjoyed that first hour, really kind of uplifting. And second hour here, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Of course, I'm joined by Frank Vaughn. Done numerous shows with Frank now, and really enjoy the conversations with the guy. I applaud the podcast that he's constantly releasing and bringing information to people. I know there's a lot of things going on in Canada right now. It's really hard to keep up with the tyranny being injected into our society by this Liberal government. Everywhere we turn, we see it coming. And thanks, Frank, for coming in today. And let's get down this rabbit hole a little bit. We were just talking about children before we came to the mic here. I could really get started there because, boy, I'll tell you, some of the things that I'm starting to understand and read and fully comprehend about what's going on to children in our world, it just absolutely blows me away, especially with this 10-year-old drag queen being paraded around on mainstream as he's come some kind of a she-god. I mean, am I living? Is this really where I'm living now? Somebody wake me up, please, because I want out of here. How you doing, Frank?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
But that's no, really I'm okay. How I feel about
it. That's how I feel about it, buddy. Are we?
Well, and I can't believe as a 38-year-old man, you know, I haven't seen as much of this life as you have. But going back 20 years, when I was 18, or even 20 or 25, even 10 years ago, I would have never anticipated that we would be indoctrinating children into the idea that they can have sex changes and switch genders at the flip of a switch with no consequences. Now, I just watched a video last night. You mentioned that kid. I wasn't allowed to post a picture of that kid with RuPaul on Facebook because it violated Facebook's community standards. So I'm not allowed to post that picture on Facebook because it violates the community standards, but they can publish it. They can put this kid all over the mainstream media and celebrate this 10-year-old drag queen as though it's some sort of progressive wonder. Now, I watched a video last night, and what it was this transgender dude, and the introduction's basically, oh yeah, tell the children to change, it's fine. And then it cuts to these kids, because we're now getting years down this rabbit hole, especially in particular jurisdictions and countries. And there's kids who are 12, 13, 14 years old who listened to this agenda, who listened to this stuff. They went through with it. They had the hormone therapy. They screwed up adolescence completely. Now they're 18, now they're 19, now they're 20, and they want to kill themselves. They're filled with regret. They're crying on camera. They're saying that their transition was the worst thing they could have ever done. And, of course, that's how they feel. But the issue is we, as a society, as well as parents, we failed these kids. Because a child is supposed to be nurtured and secured and brought up safely so that they can flower into the fullness of adulthood. And what we've done is we've taken them before puberty, and we're now telling them, you can alter your life. You can render yourself sterile. You can change sexes just like you change clothes. Everything will be fine. They can't vote. They can't drink. They can't gamble. They can't buy porn. They can't legally engage in sex. They can't do anything. They can't gainfully be employed under the age of 15. I don't know what it's like out there, but we're telling them they can change their sex. It's and I can't believe this is mainstream now, and I can't believe there's people out there who defend it, because this is really near and dear to me, and I am flabbergasted that I actually have to have this debate with people, that I have to argue this point, not with a lot of people. The vast majority of people understand how sick and disgusting this is, but some people will actually defend it, and that's the part that I find exceptionally surprising.
Disturbing. And I wasn't laughing. I was laughing at the hypocrisy of the whole situation, Frank, and just how it disturbs me sometimes when I have a thought that goes through my brain that absolutely repulses me. I just have to chuckle about it. and what I well, see
what
going
do?
On
right sometimes.
Now. What else? Sometimes that's the only way I can address it, because what I see right now, these people that are promoting this agenda, it's just a very, very small percentage of the population that's having a major impact on our children. It's just, why aren't parents being parents? What has happened to the minds of parents to think that they can allow this to go on with their children and it's beneficial? Like you said, Frank, you really only have to go look at the stats on suicides on transgenders. Go look at the stats, hardcore information about statistics, about suicides, and it'll blow your mind. It really will. But you'll never hear that talked about. You'll never hear that propagated. This is just, I honestly feel like I'm at a point where I'm living in a dream world. I didn't think ever in my life that I would see this kind of behavior, this destructive behavior being promoted by mainstream media, and this child being glamorized like he's some kind of a she-god. And people accepting this. What is going on in our world, Frank? I really am at a loss to understand how people can even begin to accept this kind of behavior, my friend. Period.
Well, I think people in general they're afraid and they're pacified. There's a lot of reasons they're pacified. Parents are afraid. I've got friends right now, and we'll leave it at that. They're going through some stuff. They're having a separation, and in the process of having the separation, which, I mean, this is part of it too. We've lost morality. We've lost family values. We've got a culture of disposable relationships and easy sex and no commitments, and we deify the individual. So going back a few years to when I was growing up, with Much Music and MTV and all these other variants, you've basically got people selling you on materialism, rampant materialism, and also self-indulgence. So we've created this culture where there's a lot of people who don't feel like they have any ties to anything greater than hand-to-mouth, moment-to-moment material consumption. And then on top of that, we have this increasing amount of state power. So you have parents in the situation that I was trying to highlight, where they're trying to separate for whatever reason, and in the middle of this, they've got a young girl. And that girl's come home from school after being educated by the system that she can change genders like clothes. She's come home from school, and now she claims she's transgender. And she's asking the parents for hormone therapy. And the system, the teachers, and the school system is encouraging her in this choice. And they're applying pressure to the parents to go through with this. And the parents are trying to dissuade the child from doing this because it will cause irreparable harm to their life, but they're afraid of CAS getting involved and taking the kid away, because in Ontario, under Bill 89, the government claimed that power. They inserted into the language of basically what qualifies as proper care for a kid now comes down to sexual orientation and their gender. And even though they're not allowed to legally engage in sex, and they haven't even hit puberty yet, they're in the law, they're supposedly capable of making the decision that they're no longer girls, they're boys, and they're no longer boys and they're girls. And the state is using... Go ahead.
Is Bill C-89 still in effect in Ontario? I thought that was abolished when Ford came into power.
I'm not...
Put on back burners. I thought they reverted to the original, to the 2000... I think I actually phoned Ford's office and asked them about that, and they said that program wasn't in effect right now, that they were doing a province-wide referendum.
Now, they revoked the curriculum, but as far as I know, I mean, this what I'm telling you about is an experience that a set of parents are having right now. So I don't know if there's a separate, if Bill 89 is the sex ed component is part of it, and then there's also the child care services, if they have their own component that's still in effect. All I know is what this child's going through, and she's been in school under Bill 89, and even if it has been revoked, the damage is already done because it's already in her head. And I know when I was a teenager, even before that, kids want attention. And if you can't get it, you're going to find a way to get it. You'll start smoking cigarettes. You'll find peer attention. You'll do this sort of stuff. Everybody does it. And what they've done is they've created a big old basket of attention. If you come out and you say you're transgender, you're going to get all this attention. Yeah, it's, you know, and the kid isn't there. They can't properly assess the consequences of that choice, and the system is failing them, and in a sense, it's putting the fear into the parent to actually say, no, you're nuts. You're a girl. You're going to be raised as a girl, and that's how that's going to be. And when you're an adult, you can make any choice you want to destroy your body. But as long as you're under my care and stewardship, you're going to be raised as you are.
Yeah, and then the child, of course, and the parent says, well, you can't go through with that. It's going to look at that loss of attention that all of a sudden that's being heaped on he or she. And, you know, you're right, Frank. You know, I really kind of never really thought of it in that perspective, but I remember when I went to school, we all had those feelings of wanting to be accepted and wanting attention. And you're right. You know, this is put in front of a child, and all of a sudden they're getting accolades from everywhere. This 10-year-old drag queen that's parading around the United States is being treated like she's just the greatest thing since the invention of the wheel. And it to be propagated and supported and put out by the mainstream really shows you how far these people are pushing this agenda right now. We got to stop this crap, buddy. Period.
Well, this stuff is illegal. I mean, what they're doing, literally, I can't post a picture of it on Facebook because it constitutes child pornography. Basically, that's why I can't post it. They didn't use those words, but they said this image offends our community standards for indecency. So it's okay, you know the image I'm talking about.
I know the image. I know the image. Go ahead.
So it's RuPaul, one of the most famous drag queens in the history of drag queens, with this 10-year-old child. I can't post it to Facebook because it violates community standards, but it can be promoted like it's some. I mean, the picture itself, the original tweet, had thousands of likes and thousands of retweets. And I gotta wonder, who are these sick, twisted people who would retweet this? Who are the sick, twisted people who would like this? Because in my opinion, and this is really the direction I'm taking it, if you support this stuff, you support child abuse, and that's the end of the story. And I'm gonna fight you on that until the day I die. Keep your hands out of my family, and don't try and tell me that gender is mutable at that age. You're born a boy, you're born a girl. Look at nature. That's how it works. If you want to make decisions because you're a conscious individual, because you're a human being and you have that power to make those kinds of decisions when you're an adult, go for it. I think there's something to be said about that, but go for it. But leave the kids out of it. I mean, my God, leave the children alone. I can't believe we have to have this discussion. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's almost like we're in a dream world, Frank. It really is. But this enemy is right at our door right now, and we've got to call him out because this kind of stuff is having such a destructive effect on our children. And to parents that can actually sit back and think this is beneficial to a child, really, I don't know what is going on in their brains, Frank. I mean, a boy is a boy. I was raised as a boy, man. I was out doing boy things all my life. It was the best times in my life. And girls were our favorite targets with the snakes we used to go get. I mean, we were boys and the girls were girls, and there was none of this crap injected into our brain. But now children, the most susceptible part of our society, the most easily persuaded and susceptible part of our society, are having this stuff put into their brain at a time when it is absolutely irrelevant. So we really got to get to the core of the problem and call out the individuals that are promoting this. And it's a very, very small sector of our society. So I hope that people can get involved in that, Frank, because we can put a stop to this. We can't.
Well,
it's just parents wanting to get involved. So to me, that's
a little bit. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was finished my thought. Go ahead.
No, in a little bit, it comes down to we're forgetting the meaning of words. We're now calling things that are abnormal normal. The vast majority of society, the vast majority of human beings, coalesce into male-female partnerships and have families. That's what we do. That is, by definition, that's the norm. That's the normative behavior. Any departure from that is an abnormal behavior. That doesn't mean, like, we've taken it to mean that normal is right and abnormal is wrong. But what it really means is one is a norm and one is not a norm. So we forgot the meaning of words. So now we're taking completely abnormal behavior, like a 10-year-old child or a 9-year-old child or an 8-year-old child or 5-year-olds I've seen, who say they want to transition to the opposite sex. And we're calling that normal, and we're saying that's normal, that's healthy, that's a wonderful expression of individuality, and it's completely wrong. By the definition of the word norm, it's not a norm. It's abnormal. And this, we literally are warping reality, and we've been doing it for a long time through the media. And I think, honestly, I believe wholeheartedly at this stage, the objective is you have to weaken the family, you have to shatter meaning, and you have to destroy morality. And if you can do that, the state can step into the vacuum, and that's that's the end of the story. That's as far as the story needs to go. Because a family, a family is the ultimate thing that can undermine an all-powerful state. The idea of a democratic society or the idea of a Republican society, you take your pick, it is underpinned by an informed and involved electorate and independent family units. And if you can kill, first off, you kill the informed and involved electorate. Look around. You can ask college students. They have no idea what's going on. They don't know the name of their MP. They barely know how to vote. Most of them don't vote. But they're in school learning about gender studies, or they're getting their Bachelor of Fine Arts or whatever they're doing. And so you've basically removed, and then you keep people so busy because the government's taking half your money. So you have to work twice as long. Both parents have to leave the home. The kids in daycare getting fed this ideology as well, free from the parent. So you've basically taken the citizen and you've rendered them null and void because they don't have the time to be involved anymore. For various reasons, they're not involved. And then at the same time, you're undermining family, you undermine morality, you undermine value systems, and you create all these individualistic people wandering around like automatons seeking the next material pleasure and having no meaning. So they have this void in them. So they fill that void with antidepressants, and they fill that void with overeating, and they fill that void with drugs, and they fill that void with methamphetamine.
Pornography
and everybody.
Everything is good. Sorry? Pornography and everything else that's good.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, and you know, I know you're being sarcastic. It's not good. I'm blessed because I've had a decade in the wilderness, let's say. I've actually had longer than that now where I've been able to self-define my life. I've grown food. I've got a wife I love. I've learned meaningful things. I've gotten involved in the community. I've made relationships and friendships, and I've basically self-taught myself meaning and got out of this media culture, got out of this pop culture to the point where it has no effect on me. And now I interact with the town, or I go and visit people, and I watch the stuff they watch on TV, and I see how they're interfaced with it, and I can see the destructive pattern. You can't convince me now that it's not intentional. It's motivated by people who want control, and that's to me, that's the end of the story, and that's what we're pushing back against. Ultimately, underneath everything else, it's this assault on morality and family. And you can arrive at these things to anybody's listening. You know, the word moral is linked into God, and God is linked into Christianity, and they've done such a great job of demonizing those things. Look, you can arrive at morality, and you don't have to touch either of those subjects. That's a discussion for another time, but morality is something that you can arrive at by different paths, and this oligarchic collectivism that they're pushing on everybody breaks off all those pathways and devalues meaning.
Absolutely. You hit it on the nose, Frank. I mean, if you destroy the family unit, you destroy that civilization. And that's been played out before in human history. And the exact same thing we see happening today has worked for them before, so that, of course, they're using it again. And what I see going on right now is an all-out attack on our morality and our family unit. And I couldn't agree with you more. So this agenda that's being played out on us didn't happen overnight. That there's these evil, evil people that sit in think tanks, and some of them 50, 60 years ago, and came up with these avenues and ways of manipulating society to get us to the point we are now. We have lost touch with reality. We have lost touch with our moral base. Well, you said Christianity is being demonized all over the world. Evil is running wild, Frank. So we'll call it that. Call it the devil. Call it Lucifer. Call it whatever you want. What we're seeing right now on this planet is a spiritual battle. And that could tie back to anything that we're talking about right now. It's a battle between evil and good. However you want to clarify that in your mind.
Mm-hmm. No, and you can arrive at that conclusion in a variety of ways. But the baseless existence, when I say baseless, I mean devoid of meaning, which I've already gone over. Without meaning, without a broader sense of morality, without a broader sense of what life is all about, without dedication to family or to a spouse or to the future, because this is another aspect of it. So many of these world leaders, Trudeau being one of the exceptions, actually, so many of these world leaders who are really driving this, not just in the political sphere, but behind the scenes, they don't have children. They don't have that tie to the future. They haven't, and they don't pursue that bond. They have little left of family in their lives, and I think a tie to children, whether it's yours or nieces and nephews or even just children in your community, but it ties you to the future in a way that gives life a broader meaning, because it's something that goes beyond your lifetime. And, you know, a lot of these movers, like Merkel, like Macron, they don't have children. I don't even think Elizabeth May has any kids, does she? Does May have children?
I don't think she does.
But it's unbelievable. It's
almost at a point you don't want to believe all this stuff that's going on.
It's bizarre that it's real, especially the attack on the children, especially, and that's, that part gets, it kills me. And then you see these kids who have gone through it. They've transitioned. They've done all the stuff the state's told them to. They've embraced this new paradigm. And of course, at the age of 18, 19, and 20, they are filled with remorse and regret, and they have no idea how they arrived at that point. Because
we'll start off by inject vaccines in them the first month of their life. You know, let's just fill them up with vaccines. We'll destroy their brain before their brain even has a chance to develop, and then we'll put them into these kind of situations. I mean, everything we see going on to children right now, we have the highest rates of children to slog into diseases in the world. So you factor that into the equation, give them some Ritalin, give them some drugs, tell them they can be this, tell them to be that. Their brains are going in so many different directions that we end up with what we got now, Frank. Massive problems in our youth.
Yeah.
You know, to me, when I look at every aspect of what's going on in our society and what it's doing to our children, we could talk about the food that they're being fed, the GMOs that are going into their body. We know they're spraying chemicals in our sky. We know they've really ramped up the vaccine agenda here in the last 15, 20 years. Oh, and by the way, if you compare that ramp up in vaccine agenda to rise in AHDH and all other cognitive diseases in children, the scales are almost identical, but there's nothing to see there, Frank. But take that into consideration, take everything else into consideration, how their minds and bodies are being polluted, and then we interject these gender thoughts into their brain. I wouldn't want to be a child growing up right now. I didn't have to put up with that with a child. I only had to worry about getting in trouble for chasing girls or doing what boys did, getting in trouble.
Well, and it's an interesting thing. To pick one thing out of that bundle, ADHD or ADD. When I was a kid, I was diagnosed with ADHD, and the school system and the teachers, they wanted to put me on Ritalin, and my parents, thank God, they said no. But I grew up with this, and over the course of my lifetime, I've learned to apply it. It just basically means that my mind never shuts up. It goes the second I wake up in the morning, something's in there, whether it's actually thinking about something or it's just a song I heard 2 weeks ago and it's playing over and over and over again. I ask my wife sometimes, I look at her, I'll be like, what are you thinking about? And she says nothing. And I'm like, okay, you gotta be kidding me. What are you thinking about? And she's like, no, nothing. I'm just sitting here chilling out. I'm like, what are you thinking about? She says nothing. And after 12 years of asking her, I finally believe that sometimes she's genuinely thinking about nothing. I have no clue what that's like, but my mind works differently. I don't think it's a medical condition. I think it's just how my brain works. And I think somebody who has ADD has a brain that works in a different way. But we try to, and here's the point. When I was in public school, I got picked on a lot. I was a poor kid, had the teal corduroy pants that were too short because I was, getting really tall and I was going through growth spurts and thick Coke bottle glasses because my parents did the best they could for me. But, I didn't have the stylish clothes and anything. And I was growing up in a little city called the south end of Oshawa, which won't mean anything to anybody out in D.C. It was a pretty rough little area, and I was always having my lunch stolen, and, we played marbles in the afternoons, and they were stealing my marbles and stuff. So I got in fights, and a lot of those fights, I'll never forget them because they were always self-defensive. I didn't want problems. I just got into problems. So they said, look, he's got ADHD. He needs special care. He's a problem child. He's all these different things. So they ripped me out of normal classes. They stick me in these special classes, which were actually really awesome. There's only six kids, and you got to self-direct your work. It was fantastic. All I did was work all day. And then I got to grade four, moved out to a rural setting from a city, and the teachers in the rural setting who had more traditional value systems took one look at me, and they're like, this kid doesn't belong in any special classes. We're going to stick him back into regular class. And that's what they did. But the whole way, when I was in the school system in the city, City, they wanted to drug me and treat me differently. And I think now, even when I see kids that have this ADHD diagnosis, all I see is active kids. I just see kids whose pancreas converts sugar to energy at a far higher efficiency than mine does. That's what I see.
I don't see need a drug. Sign of intelligence, man. Einstein would have been diagnosed with ADHD
and given drugged out of existence. Yeah,
and drugged out of existence. And you know what, Frank? I've got a family member that I'm going to share a real quick personal experience about Ritalin, because I had a niece in my family diagnosed with ADHD. Did I get that right? But anyways, at that point there was a cassette out. And the cassette was The Dangers of Ritalin. I listened to this cassette, and I talked to my family member, and I urged them not to put my niece on Ritalin. Well, she was on it for 7 years of her life, buddy. She is now a basket case on a permanent mental disability, is suicidal, and is on an antidepressant for life. So what they're doing when they get your children on Ritalin, all they're doing is setting themselves up a patient for life. Ritalin is the most destructive thing. You know, Frank, I was back in Ontario. I'm going to share this real quick. I was back in Ontario about 10 years ago. And at this point, my niece was consuming Ritalin. There was a little a pill bottle there with these tiny little blue pills in it. And I asked Barbara, I said, you know what? I want to take one of these and find out what it does to my body. Because earlier in my life, I'm not proud of it, I did try cocaine and played around with some stuff. And that's a bad time of life, but I did actually experience what it does to the human body. And I took that little blue pill of Ritalin. And half an hour later, Frank, I felt like I'd snorted 4 good rails of coke. I was just wired for sound. So you're telling me you're putting this into the mind of a child, that the destruction and what it's doing to the neurological pathways inside this brain of that child, subjecting them to this drug, parents should be shot for doing it. But they're condoned into doing it. They're forced into doing it. The psychiatrist comes along and says, your child needs this. I mean, for God's sakes, folks, just do a little Ritalin research, and you'll never put it into your child. Go ahead. I just had to share that with you because I've seen the effects of Ritalin firsthand. And I know the effects of Ritalin firsthand.
Well, and a lot of times too, it's for the convenience of the classroom. So you've got this emphasis on you know, putting kids through public education. Class sizes are 30, 35 students. The quality of teachers varies immensely from teacher to teacher to teacher. There's good ones, there's bad ones, there's really lazy ones. So they get into any kind of behavioral problem that requires attention, whether that's a kid who's just bored. Like, I mean, I had that issue, you know, going through school where, when I was younger, I read a lot of history. I was always into history books and I was a little different that way. And, you know, you get to history class and I'd be so far ahead of what was being taught that I would just be bored out of my mind. And by the time I got to high school, I'd be skipping class and doing all, like, I just wasn't there. And I was lucky because I actually had some good teachers who, even though I wasn't showing up in class in high school and I wasn't exactly cooperating, they worked really hard with me to get me through there and pass me. And they took me to special functions in the city, which I didn't realize at the time. Took me to a thing called the Model United Nations, where essentially for 3 days we were indoctrinated into the wonder of the UN. And I remember as a kid thinking, oh, what a privilege. And I went there and I represented some African country and I thought, this is great stuff. I put forward motions and I learned the whole procedure and everything. And now looking back as an adult, I'm like, son of a gun. I was 16 years old and they were already trying to get it in my head. But anyway, you know, if you don't have a motivated teacher and you have a behavioral problem, so they go to the parent, they say, this is an issue. They bring in the doctors. The doctor recommends drugs. The teacher's happy because the kid's stoned out of their mind in the back, totally pacified, at least for the time being. And like, it's not for the kid's convenience. It's for the person administering the drug's convenience, or the person that called for the administration of it. So, and that's, I mean, kids need attention and kids roam wild, man. When I was a kid, we used to run around, climb trees, we'd disappear, our parents would have to come and find us, whatever. Never got in too big of trouble, but you were always exploring, you were always doing stuff. And now that's what we call behavioral disability. Really, childhood is not a mental disorder.
I would have been in jail for doing what I did when I was a kid, Frank, because that's all we did when we were kids is play cowboys and Indians and go down to the river, go fishing, see how far we get away from the house before parents came looking for us. So they wanted to find us. They'd call a neighbor 2 blocks away, and they'd know where we were because everybody in the community knew everybody. And that is far cry from what it is today. I mean, we knew our neighbors. We knew everybody. You ask people now if they know their neighbor next door, then most people say no. Well, why is that?
Well, and I look at the decline of church groups, for instance, because the system has so materialized people and demonized church. And like, I don't go to church myself. Maybe I should, but I don't. But I often say to my church going friends, I'm their best friend outside of church, because you know I dread the thought of what's going to happen to food banks, what's going to happen to the Rotary Club, what's going to happen to all these different service clubs, Lions clubs. That do all this work in the community, that actually run the hostels, run the food banks. What's going to happen when all the baby boomers that are doing that sort of stuff start dying off? Because I don't see, from Generation X on down through millennials and stuff, I don't see that community spirit active. You see some political, often misdirected political involvement. But man, I went and did flood relief a few years back. There was a big river that flooded nearby, and the wife and I, we shut everything down for a couple of days, and we went out and we filled sandbags and, you know, and we coordinated this operation and whatever. And the people that were there, I mean, there wasn't much color in their hair. There wasn't very many young people there. The people that were there tended to be family people who had children and had that connection to the future and had a bit of a connection to the community, farm people, rural people, whatever. But it was a lot of older people, like upper 50s into their 60s, filling sandbags, loading them on these trucks, and sending them off to these people on the river to try and save their property. And I remember the 2 days I was there, I was just like, man, what are we going to do? Like, what are we coming into? Because the community value has been so broken down. Because like we said earlier, if you attack family, you also undermine community. Exactly. Now nobody knows their neighbors.
Exactly.
You know, like the internet's wonderful. Technology's wonderful. All these things, the devices that you and I are talking on right now are incredible. But a lot of people don't want to answer the phone anymore. You know, I'm guilty of that sometimes too. But, you know, don't want to answer the phone. Don't want to answer the door when the neighbor comes over. Don't want to go up and get to know your neighbor. Sit down, have a drink, beer, coffee, whatever you want. You don't go out to the Monday or Toonie. Like if you go, there's a community center near me and they do, Toonie Tuesday breakfast. So for $2, anybody can go there so that all the low-income people can come in. It's all donor-run, everything else. You go there, it's all seniors, man. It's all seniors. There's no, you know, I'm the only guy with any color in my hair. They do open mic night, and there's nobody there under the age of 45 because nobody gets out of their house. Like, maybe they're off doing other things. I don't really know, but I see worrying signs that community spirit has declined massively in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all part of an agenda, Frank. And if you know, there's multiple reasons we could talk why that has happened. But if you really look at everything that has happened in our society in the last, I say more so in the last 40 years, because I'm reflecting back to my childhood, which was kind of like 55, 54, you know, 60 years ago. Things were really, really different. So what I see today and, things, you know, you can't make changes in society very quickly and not have society identify them. So what they've done in society is they slowly but surely over the last 30, 40 years have made changes. They might just seem like a small change, but it's like taking an inch, eventually you get a mile. And now we find ourselves in a society that's completely turned upside down. What was good when I was a child is now bad. What was bad when I was a child is now good. We have a society that's openly endorsing promotion of 10-year-old boys that parents allow them to dress up as a girl. We have all these things going on, and why is society accepting it? Some days I wake up and ask myself why, but it really comes back down to a battle of evil against good, Frank. And we know at this particular time, I know you're a spiritual man yourself, we know at this particular time in human history, the evil entities are going to be running wild, however you want to call them. And that's what we see going on to the T, all through our society. It doesn't matter what we talk about. We see that coming through entertainment, through every aspect of our society, an attack on the morality of that society. Anytime a society in history has become demoralized to the point where we are now, that society has collapsed. And this one will, Frank.
Well, that's, you know, you're right. We have done this before.
It's repeated itself.
Yeah, well, and it's a, unfortunately, there's a book out there called The Fourth Turning, and it talks about generational cycles. The Romans used to call it the seculum, a four-generation cycle that we're stuck repeating constantly, and we have the fortune or misfortune of living in a time of immense weakness right now. And what typically happens is what we've seen, and we went through this in a time of transition in the after the First World War through the 20s, through the 30s, and into the 40s, where between 1914 and 1945, the world experienced a bloodbath unlike anything it had ever experienced before. And by the end of the Second World War, when soldiers were returning home, first off, if you had a home to return to, because every part of the old world was devastated, just decimated by the end of the war, so much killing and bloodshed. You know, they say 50 million soldiers died, 50 million people died. You know, that probably doesn't even scratch the surface because, you know, official numbers are always underestimated and not every civilian death gets counted. And people came back and they were so sick of bleeding. They were so sick of rape. They were so sick of dying. And they were so sick of the culture that the 1920s and the 1930s had a direct responsibility and correlation for what happened in the bloodbath of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. People came back so sick of that. They established what I look back on as the most beautiful time in modern history, which was the 1950s. To me, that's the golden, that was the golden years. Era. That mm-hmm. is the, you know, I look back on that, buddy, with rose-tinted glasses. I wasn't alive for it, but you had cohesive families. You had an involved citizen culture. You had well-behaved children. You had strong churches. You had weak governments. And by weak government, I mean state power was restricted by the motivation of the citizen. But the mistake that was made was the generation that came out of that was coddled, and they were protected from that experience of warfare. And they grew up in the shadow of fear of the Second World War. But through this Marxism and communism became so discredited in the 1970s that it all morphed and went underground. And this is why we have cultural Marxism today. And that's the philosophy of materialism, replacing spirituality and replacing family, is the same sort of process that Russia went through in the 1920s. The same sort of purging, the same sort of attack, because it's just, I can't even call it subtle anymore, Barry. Like, it's not subtle. It's out in the open these days. It was subtle in the 70s and 80s. Now it's in your face. They've got dancing 10-year-old drag queens in the mainstream media for public consumption. I don't know if anything symbolizes the problem more than that does.
Yeah, that really, that gets me right to the core. And it just and really, if that doesn't wake people up to how far our society has fallen, Frank, I don't know what will. Go ahead.
No, and I just was going to say, like, with a bit of historical context, because I don't know why, but I've always been very interested in history and how we arrived at this point. If you have the historical context, which I like to think I do, you can see what's coming, which is, if we don't, I'd like to avoid the disaster we're walking into, because it's going to be a disaster that's going to make the World War look like a vacation, a family vacation. Mm-hmm. But with people will wake up and they will return to their roots. They will return to family and they will return to morality. It's a matter of what kind of process they have to go through to get there. I would love for it to be an intellectual process because I don't want to experience the wake-up call that every generation that's had to go through the wake-up call, let's call it, in the 80 to 100 year cycle when they go through the wake-up call. I don't want to have to deal with that because I've read about it going back centuries. And at this stage of the game, it's just not going to be pretty. And we could totally avoid it if we just wake up and start thinking again, you know, and realize some pretty basic things, like it's not okay to teach children that they can change their gender, like it's a set of clothes. And since we're arguing over that, and since we can't seem to get that fundamental basic thing together in our heads, you start to lose faith in whether or not humans can wake up to what matters before we walk headlong into a global crisis like we've never seen before. I think we're...
That's where we're headed.
And I hate to say that. It's just... You look at where China's going. You look at where America is. You look at the world and how it's shaping up, and it's coming to a head. And we're not equipped to lance that wound in a gentle way. It's going to explode, you know?
Well, I would agree with you, Frank. We all have a different thought about how it's all going to unfold here in the next little while, but we all know that things are going to change. And what I see coming, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. Whether we can stem it at this point, like you said, have we gone past the point of no return when society allows the now advocation of pornography as being a normal human sexual orientation? We allowed things going on inside the Vatican that we know are absolutely barbaric. We know the involvement of the Catholic Church and all these different sexual crimes. We know about kidnapping of children. We know about human sacrifice of children. We know about all these rituals that are very, very real in our world. And yet people some scorn like everything's all right. It's like we're at a point right now, whether you stand up for good or evil. You either identify this evil as being destructive and totally unbeneficial to your future, or you go along with the program. And if you go along with the program, I think you're going to have a very, very rough time in the future, myself.
Well, I wish the Vatican wasn't the face of Christendom. Because, you know,
Catholicism and Christianity are two different things, Frank. You know
that. Of course they are. And I know you know that.
Look at the Jesuit background and all the other ties, Freemasonry, we could talk about that, and Jesuits and the Pope, we could talk about all the connections, but we don't have time for that today. But they're two different entities. Go ahead.
No, it's the difference between the Catholic, Catholicism, and not all Catholics, but the difference between the Vatican and, for instance, the local Baptist church about 20, 30 minutes up the road from me, which they all just pulled together and they built this thing. And I mean, these people that attend this church, they're the movers in the community. They do everything. They do all the unseen work. There was a guy, John, and this other guy, I can't remember his name. He's deceased now. It doesn't matter. They would, one of the small towns nearby, every day, in the morning, they would go and they would just walk the canal and they would walk the streets and they would pick up all the garbage that all the idiots had just thrown out their windows or whatever. They pick up all the garbage and they deposit it in the garbage can, and they did this every single day. And until somebody nominated them for a civic award, they didn't get any recognition from it. But these are
the people
who still have the value systems, you know. And unfortunately, when you try to talk Christianity with an atheist, or you try to talk the benefits of religion, when you try to talk the benefits of religion to a lot of people nowadays, their immediate reaction is negative. And it's like, no, you're not seeing the whole picture. You're only seeing one side of it, and you're not seeing all the benefits that go on behind the scenes. I'm trying to tell you about it as a non-religious person. I'm a spiritual person, yeah, as you've highlighted, but I don't attend church. I just happen to have a basic admiration for the people who do. And I see, you know, they say, oh, they corrupt their kids and whatever. And I look at them and I'm like, you know, the one family that I always think about, there's four kids, ranging in age, I think from 9 to 17. And dude, they can add in their heads. They're sharp as whips. They're really observant. They can read people. They've all got cell phones, but they're not stuck on them all the time. The cell phone sits in their pocket. These are kids. Mm-hmm. And they'll use it as a tool like it's supposed to be. They won't be just stuck to it, sucking in media all the time. Like they're so well adjusted. It's incredible. And I see that all around, and people are like, oh, you know, church ruins kids. Not from where I'm sitting. Like, not from where I'm sitting. I see the results. So I wish people could learn to identify good things instead of labels. So just look for good in things rather than what something is. Someone's not just a Christian or, you know, whatever title you want to assess them. Look at them as people. Look at the results. Look at the actions. Look at the environment that they create around them, and assess that accurately and not just dismiss it because they do this or they do that.
Or condemn them for what they believe. Which, of course, you will get. I mean, if you bring up a spiritual conversation with most people, they condemn you right off the bat. And to me, it doesn't matter. I'm going to just trust my thoughts and my feelings. And to me, my connection with Jesus Christ in my life has made a good change in me. And that's all I'm going to say. I see the changes he's made in me, and I'm not the man I was earlier in my life. And that's That's the most honest thing I've ever said to you. So he's made good changes in me, and all I can say is people have to find their own path. But at this particular point in history, I think it's very, very important that people have a spiritual connection, Frank, because we are going to see, and I think you probably agree with me, some pretty traumatic events happen in the very near future. There's multiple bubbles we're sitting on right now that really could impact the human race and turn society into a state of chaos in a very, very short period of time. We don't have time to talk about that today, but if you're not prepared for that and society does go sideways, say our banking system goes sideways or something else monumental goes sideways and you're not prepared for it, you will be put into a state of chaos. And you know, and I know when the human brain is subjected to a state of chaos, that brain will look and will take any answer that it can find to get rid of the scream. And of course, along doesn't come the government. So be prepared, because we are, I believe, going to see some crazy things unfold in the near future.
It's only a matter of one system shock before the... I remember years and years ago when this concept really hit me. I was in a penthouse apartment in Toronto, and I was standing out on this, I think it was like the 25th floor, 26th floor, this high rise, and I'm looking at the city. It was 6:30 in the morning. I hadn't gone to bed yet. You know, it was that stage of life. And I was just watching. I was watching the traffic move. And it hit me for the first time that all that traffic, all those systems have to move every single day or the entire edifice comes crashing down within 72 hours. And, like, I came to that number myself. And then later on in life, you know, you're doing research or whatever, you find out that's pretty much it. You got 3 days before society... If you want an example of that that's more modern, you just look at New Orleans when the hurricane hit. What happened in 3 days down there is what could happen with any system shock in any nation. So if you have a war or you have a massive power grid, the sun could spit out a Carrington-level event, solar flare, and knock the power grid out for 3 months anywhere in the world.
I know. That'd be crazy, wouldn't it, Frank? What? Where's the TV?
Well, in Ontario, we had the blackout.
Ice storm.
I think it was 2000. No, it was a blackout in 2003. Shut down the northeastern power grid. Right. Now I remember, and this is interesting because back then I wasn't as tuned in as I am now. I was working landscaping. This will only take a second. I was working landscaping, and all the power was out. So I sat down with the guy I was working for, and we were trying to get a radio station in. Then we found one, and the guy was like, "We don't know what's going on. We've only got power for so long." No idea if this was a terrorist attack or blah, 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 whatever. So I drive back home, and my dad was still alive. And I said to Dad, "Do you know what's going on?" He's like, "No, the radio's out. Everything's out. I have no idea what's happening." So as in my thinking at the time, at 23 years old, I decided to hop in my car like every other idiot and drive around and look at it. My dad started prepping rainwater and getting set up to live without power like he had experienced. So he was able to wash and clean up and everything else, even though we didn't have power for 30 hours. When I finally came home that night with my tank of gas empty and spent, because I'm an idiot, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Dad had it all set up, so we had water to drink, we could wash, we had all this stuff done. And I never really forgot that, because that's how quick it can happen. It can be gone. And I think there's the Christian phrase, like a thief in the night, you will not know the hour.
In 1 hour, everything could change, Frank.
It's something like that. And that's how it's going to be. Say the Chinese decide to sink an American aircraft carrier. What do you think happens next?
What about we get 3 or 4 major quakes going off in a 72-hour period, like the Cascadia going, triggering the San Andreas, triggering the San Madre, triggering a couple others, which would happen if 2 or 3 went off at the same time? Boy, that could really change the world in 72 hours, man. You wouldn't even recognize it. That's so fast thing to change. We live day by day, Frank. I wake up every day, and if I see light, I thank God for it, and I've got another day, but nobody's promised tomorrow. We got so many little things that could go off that we're not in control right now at this point. And, of course, we haven't even talked about monitoring and the effect that could have on society. Multiple bubbles that we're sitting on. So I just thank God for every day, man. And hopefully there's a good one tomorrow, because it can all change. Anyways, we got into some different thoughts here today. Last thought. What was I... boy, I lost that thought. There was a question I had for you, Frank. Maxime Bernier in his statement the other day on the United Nations. What was your take on that? He didn't actually call him out by name, did he? He actually kind of skirted the boat a little bit, but he had some pretty thoughtful thoughts about that the other day. You want to share that with us?
Yeah, no, he's been I've been watching him on Twitter there. He's been pretty vocal about it. He's calling attention to the United Nations Parliament, which something like 60-odd members of our House of Commons are members of this push, this United – I can't remember the official name, but it's basically it's United May. Nations Parliamentary Association, I think.
Right, Parliamentary Association. Nathan Cullen, my MP, is part of that. He's on that list of names. I was looking at the list of names yesterday on that.
Yep, and it's bipartisan.
Yep.
It's a bipartisan thing. We've got all party membership, and yeah, somehow they think it would be a good idea to one day hand over to the United Nations and create this new democratic body, which Canada would have exactly 0.4% of the membership in.
Yeah, absolutely no say in what is going on.
So in terms of Bernier, I'm super happy that he's calling attention to it, and I'm also happy that he's calling attention to all these UN deals. From Agenda 2030 to Global Migration Compact to the Paris Climate Treaty, because every single one of these things is carving a piece of Canadian sovereignty off and handing it to an unelected global socialist body. Because that's what they are.
Run by some of the biggest or some of the most human right violating countries in the world.
If yeah, what was it the other day? Yemen? Yemen got elected?
We'll take a look, guys, at who is running the United Nations, for God's sake. Take 10 minutes and go study who is running the United Nations and get back to me. Because if you haven't, you think it's a good organization. Oh, my God. You just haven't spent any time at all studying it. And to me, we have to get the UN out of Canada. Period.
Yep.
No place in you. Canada.
No,
so we've got a minute left here, Frank. Why don't you share with people where they can see some of your videos? Frank does lots of podcasts. I try and listen to everyone he does. Really articulates some good points in his podcast. So take some time and go and have a look at Frank's channel. Where can they find you, Frank?
Yeah, so I mean, we do the podcast, so there's obviously the audio only option, and then each podcast also has an accompanying video. It's the same thing; it just has visuals. And you can find all of it at www.frankvaughn.ca. So it's FrankVaughn.ca. All the videos are there. I write articles too. I do book reviews. I do all sorts of stuff. And basically I'm trying to keep more active with that these days and turn it into something that's a little bit more of a permanent fixture in the Canadian landscape. There's some receptivity there, and I'm always open to debate. You don't have to agree with me. Agreement is not a condition of friendship or respect. So, yeah, check
it
out.
Well said. Well said, man. Last thought. What do you think of this convoy that's forming?
I'm watching it closely. And if I could, if there's anybody out there listening to this, I just want to warn you folks, unless you intend to follow through on it, and if you do, you shouldn't be commenting. Stop threatening to kill the Prime Minister. Because it's getting you all the wrong attention, and it's going to hurt you. You know, you want to fundraise, you want to make social networks. I totally get it. But in the next podcast I do, I'm going to show you the kinds of people who are watching you. And they're far-left agents. They've got message boards. They've got forums and blog spots. And they're screenshotting everything you say and reporting it to the RCMP. And I'm going to show you that.
Yeah, and trolls have infiltrated organizations up and down.
That's true, too.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we're seeing that, Frank, and I'm well aware of the situation. So well said, my friend. As always, Frank, it's a pleasure having you in, and I look forward to talking to you sometime in the near future again. Been a great show, and thanks again to Terry for the first hour and some of the information he shared with our audience today. I've enjoyed this last 2 hour, guys, and thanks to Steve, of course, for producing my show. Thanks to PRI for providing this platform for us to share our thoughts. And I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all and have a great week. Bye for now.